Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes, offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Wildlife Federation, a private nonprofit conservation organization working on behalf of Florida's fish, wildlife, and their habitats, as well as outdoor education and sustainable nature-based recreation. The Florida Wildlife Federation, since 1936, fwfonline.org. And from Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys, Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at afela.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Last week's Parkland shooting has left many throwing around terms like gun issue and mental health issue. But what exactly is a mental health issue?
You know, people without mental health issues don't commit these attacks. But that's a very broad view of it.
Also tonight, a House tax package is drawing some strong opposition.
I know saying this to elected officials is a difficult thing, because what elected official doesn't want to say they supported tax cuts? But it's not sound fiscal policy.
We'll also learn that the students from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High weren't the only advocates urging lawmakers to address critical issues this week. And we'll ask one of the Capitol Press Corps' most experienced members, do you think the legislature will get out on time? Just 2 weeks and one day to go in the 2018 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. Following last week's school massacre in Parkland, many are calling for increased gun regulation, but some are also citing mental health issues in America that need to be addressed. Sean Mulcahy has that story.
While much of the conversation revolves around gun legislation, some people are also pointing to a greater need for mental health care. Frank Farley is the former president of the American Psychological Association and a psychologist at Temple University. He explains the first problem with discussing mental health problems is the ambiguity of the term. He says mass murderers are suffering from some disorder, but it might be above the understanding of modern psychology.
My view is that they are sick, for sure. Anybody who slaughters people that way is a sick person. But my feeling is it might be sick in their own way. That is, it may not connect very well with traditional diagnoses.
When people think of mental illness, what they're usually thinking of is what's called a major mental issue. This includes conditions like schizophrenia and bipolar disorder.
We need to understand mass murderers. We need to understand how much of their behavior is unique, how much of their psychology is unique, and how much is in common with other mass murderers, so that we can hopefully get some kind of a profile that will help us ultimately in prevention.
But what steps can lawmakers take to address mental health issues? Bill Lee heads the Florida School Administrators Association. He says schools need to strengthen their psychology programs but lack the resources to do so.
The in-depth types of counseling that some of these people need are really in need of serious professional help that right now the schools certainly don't have the resources to provide.
And Farley agrees. He says devoting more resources to school psychologists can help identify children who might pose a risk and, at the very least, refer them to outside help.
Things like impulse control and dealing with anger and social emotional issues, these can be dealt with in the early years. They will often show themselves in school settings.
But the cooperation between schools and outside organizations, or even law enforcement, can be tricky, notes Peter Langman. He's a psychologist and the author of School Shooters, Understanding High School, College, and Adult Perpetrators.
There's been at least one shooting that occurred, at least partly because administrators felt that their hands were tied by FERPA and were not allowed by law to share information regarding a potential homicidal student.
The shooting he's referring to occurred in 2013 in Centennial, Colorado. student Carl Pearson threatened his teacher, and the school conducted a threat assessment which determined he was a low-level risk. Administrators didn't share the assessment with law enforcement, fearing it would violate the federal student privacy law known as FERPA, which protects child education records. And ultimately, Pearson killed one student. Langman says lawmakers must be clear about the way schools report potential dangers and cooperate with law enforcement. And there's another issue, laws regarding patient privacy rights known as HIPAA.
It's a matter of protocols, and those protocols can be developed on the local levels with the community partners and with law enforcement.
Alyssa LaPolt of the Florida chapter of the National Alliance for Mental Illnesses. She says schools and mental care providers should work together to identify and properly treat children. She recommends new policies to empower schools to partner with community providers. They would conduct mental health screenings, much like physical screenings children already have, for all students in a way that identifies those students at risk for or exhibiting a mental health condition and refers them to community resources. In the wake of this most recent tragedy, it's not clear what, if any, legislation will be proposed to address mental health issues. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sean Mulcahy.
A tax cut package moving through the House is facing pushback from animal rights activists, educators, and working folks. But Regan McCarthy reports it does include more tax-free holidays and a break for nursing homes adding generators.
One of the most controversial pieces in the measure is a provision that would preempt local ordinances banning the sale of any item that is subject to sales tax. Bill sponsor Palm Coast Republican Representative Paul Renner says in recent years, local governments have established a wide range of bans.
By way of example, here in Florida, ordinances proposed or passed that would ban the sale of plastic bags, styrofoam, leaf blowers, fertilizer, which has been addressed in separate legislation across the country, prohibiting the sale of tobacco, baby bumpers.
But opponents of the bill say those bans were put in place for a reason. For example, animal rights activists say preempting local ordinances will pave the way for more puppies from puppy mills. Jennifer Hobgood works for the ASPCA.
It would revoke the authority of local governments to address the harm caused by the sale of cruelly bred puppies from puppy mills. Now, most puppies sold at retail pet stores do come from puppy mills, and these are commercial pet breeding operations. Many of them, most of them in the Midwest, that prioritize profit over the well-being of the animals in their care. And dogs in these operations are often kept in overcrowded and unsanitary conditions without adequate veterinary care, food, water, or socialization.
Meanwhile, a representative from Broward County gives the example of bath salts. While they're considered illegal now, he says before a state law prohibiting the dangerous drug passed, his local government created an ordinance banning the sale. But he says if Brenner's bill passes, local governments won't be able to take those same steps to protect residents from the next dangerous substance. On the other hand, Melissa Ramba from the Florida Retail Federation says the positive side of Brenner's bill is being overlooked.
We've had retailers put out of business by ordinances. I understand the puppy mill thing. I didn't want to address it, but address the bigger problem, not the sale of cats and dogs. A retailer should be able to sell any legal product in Florida. They should be open for business. They support your local baseball teams, but the ordinances that local governments pass only support online sales. They do not support your local business.
Another provision in the House tax package that faced criticism in the House Appropriations Committee Thursday would expand the state's tax credit scholarship. Renner says there are lots of kids interested in taking advantage, so the state's working to ensure there's enough money.
In essence, what we do is not change the eligibility or the cap of those who can participate, but simply there's a problem with funding, and so we open up sales tax up to $154 million for participation in that program.
But Kathy Bame with the Florida Education Association feels the move is disingenuous.
Now, if you want to fund private school tuition, why not be honest about it and just directly fund it? If there's a constitutional issue there, then work on a provision and change the Constitution. If you're successful in convincing the public that our tax dollars should support private K-12 education schools, then you have that right. but it's just dishonest to direct the Department of Revenue to ignore sales tax revenue that you as the legislature should direct.
Meanwhile, Rich Templin with the AFL-CIO calls the entire package poor fiscal policy. He says the state has, over the past several years, been cutting too much revenue and has been reducing services as a result.
I know saying this to elected officials is a difficult thing, because what elected official doesn't want to say they supported tax cuts? But it's not sound fiscal policy when you consider that 48% of the working families in this state are the working poor. They don't have the ends to make ends meet, according to the United Way Alice report.
And many of Templin's concerns are echoed by Miami Beach Democratic Representative David Richardson. He says there are better ways for the state to spend its money.
I'm reminded, because I sit on healthcare appropriations, I've been there for 6 years, that there is still a waiting list of people with disabilities to get services from the state of Florida.
Meanwhile, Coral Springs Democratic Representative Jared Moskowitz says he's unwilling to consider any appropriations until lawmakers look at legislation as early as next week that would address increasing safety in schools. He says he wants to be sure there's plenty of money for that before giving any away in tax breaks. Despite the concerns, the measure passed the Appropriations Committee Thursday. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Controversial legislation that would restrict the ability of local governments to regulate local vacation rentals passed its first House panel today. By a 13-11 vote, the Government Accountability Committee narrowly passed the bill, which would prevent local ordinances from stopping the short-term rentals while turning over most regulation to the state. Local regulations put in place after 2011 would be nullified under the plan. Bill proponents say the issue boils down to property rights and allowing people to do what they want with their homes. Their arguments were summarized by bill sponsor Mike LaRosa. He said homeowners in a city should be treated the same, and the laws surrounding short-term rentals need to be uniform. Opponents of the legislation include hoteliers worried about increased competition and neighboring homeowners living next door to vacation rental property. One of them, Representative Joseph Abruzzo, suggested the legislation needs more work. Amendments were added to the bill today aimed at making it more difficult for sexual offenders to rent from businesses like Airbnb, HomeAway, and others. With just over 2 weeks left in the 2018 regular session, both the House bill and a similar measure in the Senate must be heard by one more legislative committee each before reaching the floor of either chamber. Still to come on Capitol Report, despite brave talk from the legislative leadership that everything is right on schedule, one of the most senior members of the Capitol press corps sees more than a few speed bumps between now and the end of session.
Basically, everyone is confused. They don't know what's going on. There are loggerheads on the budget right now. The House is trying to push some policy bills through the budget. The Senate is trying to fight that.
And some organizations visiting the Capitol this week were demanding improvements on health care and education for minorities in Florida.
Excessive discipline amongst our schools and our young girls, sexual violence, as well as, and most important, poor access to health care.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org.
On Capitol Report, the dean of the radio coverage of the Florida legislative session going back into the 1970s, Rick Flagg, joins us. And Rick, every session has its own feel. It's the way that it goes from one end to the other. How do you typify this one that's got just over 2 weeks to go?
Well, I think my favorite phrase for this session is one that we really can't say on the air, but the first word is cluster. The problem is we have too many conflicting agendas. The House Speaker is planning his run for governor. So he is doing certain things that are designed to position him for what comes next. And what comes next for him is not leading the House of Representatives. He's out of there no matter what. On the Senate side, you have a guy, Joe Negron, who is really, how should I say this? He is willing to work deals with people. He is considered too collegial sometimes for the system, too easy to roll over. And that pretty much played out in the last session. I think because of what happened last session, the Senate president is more reluctant to get involved in these deals because he basically was hoisted on his own petard last year and hung out to dry. And then there's Governor Scott, who is playing his political futures. You know, he's got his game underway. He's running for the U.S. Senate in all likelihood, not officially yet. But everyone's political future has colored the session, which makes the normal legislative process more difficult. Now, throw on top of that the shootings down in South Florida. That has upended everything now. I mean, you've seen the legislature as long as I have. I've been covering them for so long. I can't remember when a gun bill has actually had a chance of passage. And yet they may actually do something this year. That makes it historic, and that would not have happened without what happened to the tragedy in South Florida. That, in turn, mixing with all the other politics, basically everyone is confused. They don't know what's going on. There are loggerheads on the budget right now. The House is trying to push some policy bills through the budget. The Senate is trying to fight that, and the Senate is also crippled to begin with because they lost Jack Latvala with the sexual harassment scandal. I mean, I've never seen anything like the session that's underway. Between the political agendas, the Me Too movement, the sexual harassment scandals, the shootings in South Florida, it is basically a recipe for disaster.
And right now the disaster is that with just over 2 weeks to go, there has to be some kind of movement on the budget, or you are talking special session in an election year when these guys have got to hit the trail and start raising money for their reelection campaigns.
Exactly. And that's the whole reason they started the session early this year in January, because they wanted to clear the deck and get on the campaign as soon as possible. And now the policies and procedures that they're adopting are making that impossible. The way they're going now, they're going to have to come back in a special session. And I really, unless there's a sudden epiphany over the weekend, I don't see them being able to pull it together. I mean, these guys haven't even set their allocation levels yet. You can't build a budget until you can fill out the separate columns, and they won't fill out the separate columns yet. So it's just a matter of, it's kind of like seeing two sides playing chicken, and neither one wants to win, it seems.
Amendment 3, the anti-gambling amendment, notwithstanding, if you were a betting man, what do you think the odds are that these guys are going to get out of here on time?
You know, I don't think they're going to do it, but don't count it out. Things happen in Tallahassee. Deals happen overnight. People that were at loggerheads one day are suddenly the best friends the next day. A lot of what's going on is theater, and you just can't let the theater distract you. It's more entertaining. It's certainly a lot more fun to cover than most of the committee hearings, but they're playing games sometimes, and if games are being played, it's because someone has an agenda. There's something going on behind the scenes. It's just a matter of waiting for the big reveal.
The dean of the radio reporting side of the Florida Legislative Press Corps, Rick Flagg. Thanks for coming in, Rick.
Thank you, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Florida lawmakers are on the cusp of approving a compromise in a long-running dispute over trauma centers. Lynn Hatter reports the plan is more than 10 years in the making.
The compromise involves how many trauma centers can be in one area. Right now, there can be no more than 44 of them in the entire state, and licenses are granted according to region. Those regions, or trauma service areas, are determined by population. But in recent years, healthcare providers have clashed over the current rules, the designation of what is and isn't a trauma center, and over whether other trauma centers should be allowed to open. The House and Senate are nearing a deal on trying to clean it all up with a bill that would simplify the system.
We have done, I think, a very good job between safety nets, HCA, other for-profits, as well as the Senate, to be able to get to what most would consider a significant compromise.
That's Republican Representative Jay Trumbull laying out some key points.
The department will prepare an analysis of statewide trauma system every 3 years, beginning August 2020. The application approval process is revised so the department may only accept a letter of intent to open a new trauma center if there is statutory need for an additional trauma center. The strike call does set out to create need within statute, which takes the ambiguity out of the rule, which will reduce the significant litigation associated with trauma centers in the state.
The Senate version of the bill is by Republican Senator Dana Young. The measures do away with the statewide cap on trauma centers, but keep the population rules in place. For example, there can be no more than 2 trauma centers in an area with 1.25 million people. In areas with 2.5 million, there can be 4 trauma centers. The Department of Health would be able to determine if more are needed. Steve Asinio works with the hospital chain Columbia HCA.
It's a delicate balance to present a product to you that I think the entire state can be proud of.
The fights have often pitted safety net hospitals, which serve large numbers of uninsured and underinsured patients, against private hospital chains like Columbia HCA. Safety nets have argued new facilities take away patients and doctors, but HCA has argued adding new centers provides greater access. The bill also allows existing centers to be grandfathered in. Good news, says Mark Delegal of the Florida Safety Net Hospital Alliance.
We have worked hard with the stakeholders, with Representative Trumbull. We appreciate the work and resolve this decades-long battle over trauma. I think we've reached a good place. I don't think everyone got everything that they thought was necessary, but at the same time, I think we're going to be proud of this work product in the future.
A staff analysis of the bill notes the legislation should resolve most of the existing lawsuits surrounding trauma centers. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
As the ticking of the clock grows ever louder at the Florida Capitol, we get more on what that means from Bob Brooks at our sister operation, the Florida Channel.
15 days are now left in the session, and today is the last day bills can be heard in committee. After today, the bills have to move to the chamber floor or die. On the fast train for floor votes in the House and Senate are Senate Bill 810, authorizing an elector to deliver a vote-by-mail ballot to an early voting site in the voter's county. It passed Senate rules 13-0. Senate Bill 1282 requires property insurance policies to have a notice that hurricane insurance does not include flood insurance. That bill passed rules unanimously and goes to the Senate floor. A committee substitute for Senate Bill 664 passed out of rules by another unanimous vote. This bill requires salvage companies to provide specific notice to the owners of pleasure vessels being salvaged. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 394 would require the state fire marshal to provide cancer and mental health training to help firefighters understand on-the-job risks. The House companion also passed its final committee, and both bills head to the floor of their respective chambers. House Bill 653, filed in November by Representative Camilla Brown, would prevent photos or videos of someone being killed from being released as part of a public records request. And House Bill 1317, filed in January by Representative Kristen Jacobs, would require medical examiners to wait 10 days before they release written autopsy reports to the public. Right now, only photographs are protected. The House Government Accountability Committee approved both bills, sending them to the full House. Senate Bill 1004 allows the governor and cabinet, legislators, judges, prosecutors, and public defenders to visit juvenile detention facilities at any time between the hours of 6 a.m. and 11 p.m. This bill passed through rules and is headed for the Senate floor. And finally, Senate Bill 1650, which would expedite permanency in child placement and protect the identity of persons who provided information to DCF when a child is the subject of a protective investigation. A committee substitute for that bill passed Senate rules and now goes to the floor. From the Florida Channel, I'm Bob Brooks for Florida Public Radio.
The state would study the possibility of rushing fully loaded rail tank cars into evacuation areas to avoid a repeat of the run on gas stations that occurred before Hurricane Irma made landfall last year. That's under a bill that moved forward today in the House. The House Appropriations Committee unanimously backed the bill, which features a number of the 78 recommendations that came out of a select committee on hurricanes back in January. It includes a directive to the Department of Transportation to determine if tank cars could be used to bring fuel to areas threatened or damaged by storms. The study, which would require consultation with the rail and fuel industries, would have to be submitted by this July 1st, which is the start of the next fiscal year. And just in case you don't remember why this was such a big deal during Irma, the state really struggled to keep up with fuel demand when the storm hit back in September. Some 6.5 million Floridians were ordered to evacuate their homes, a bunch of folks were scrambling for last-minute storm supplies, and motorists in some cases took up to 12 hours to travel routes that normally would take half that amount of time. You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, the recent Black Girls Day at the Capitol was the first to highlight minority women's economic issues in Florida. Several organizations want improvements on education and better access to health care. Devondra Alston reports.
The Sisters Organizing for Understanding and Leadership Group and other minority groups want state representatives to focus on improvements in education. Soul Sister member Tajara Sarin says public schools in South Florida have a lack of resources.
There are roughly 50 students per class, and the way our desks are set up is there are roughly 30 desks. That means 20 students will be standing throughout the whole 1 hour and 30 minutes just to get an education like everyone else.
The class size amendment formally controls the number of students in each classroom for public schools. But in recent years, the state lawmakers have loosened the policy for certain courses. Meanwhile, Democratic Representative Kamaya Brown of Ocoee believes more needs to be done to support minorities.
Because we are disproportionately affected by some of America's most systemic crises. That includes police violence, equity and access to education, pay equity, excessive discipline amongst our schools and our young girls, sexual violence, as well as, and most important, poor access to health care.
Brown is pushing what she calls the Closing Gap Grant Program. The approved bill will help decrease racial and ethnic diseases like lupus by steering more funding to research. And she says if women of color continue to stay involved in the political process, changes will occur for them.
It's one thing for them to acknowledge African-American women as the wheels of our political movement, but it's also another thing when we put each other in the driver's seat. We are leaders across all sectors of this economy, and so let us begin to have Florida reflect that.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Devondra Alston.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. We also thank Devondra Alston, Sean Mulcahy, and our sister operation, the Florida Channel. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And please join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2018 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at wfsu.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Wildlife Federation. Supporting acquisition, protection, and stewardship of public and private conservation lands to protect Florida's waters. And to Everglades restoration and fish and wildlife conservation. The Florida Wildlife Federation. FWFonline.org. And from Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys, Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at AFELA.org. WFSU FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.